Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of What's It Like, where I interview folks from all over about their experiences and what it was like for them. My usual disclaimer, this is one person's story of their experience. Somebody else could have a similar experience, but a very different story to tell out of it. And that's great, that's okay. We're just hearing one person's version of the events that happened to them and what it was like for them. So I'd like to go ahead and introduce our guest for today. Thank you for joining us, Nicole.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. So in a sentence or two, can you go ahead and tell our audience what is the experience you're going to be sharing with us today?
Yeah. So we're going to talk about what it's like to live with bipolar disorder and be able to live that full, fulfilled, successful life that everybody dreams of having despite everything.
Awesome. All right. So just to get us all off on the same foot and make sure everybody has a common understanding of this. What is bipolar disorder? What does it mean? What is it?
Sure. Yeah. So bipolar disorder is a mental illness essentially it's a mood disorder. So really high highs and really low lows. So we can have what they call a manic episode, which is a lot of uncharacteristic behavior. And I'll share what my experiences were with my own manic episodes, but like making decisions that you normally wouldn't make, making rash, unsafe decisions and that sort of thing. And then it comes with really low depression as well. So the way I like to think about it is if you're on a roller coaster and you're all strapped in and everything, you go up and down like normal. And that's the average person's life. They have ups and downs and it's fine. Bipolar disorder, without the therapy and the medication and everything else that helps us stay stable, it's like being on the roller coaster without being strapped in. So you go flying up or flying down and you don't really have any control over that. So it is manageable, but it makes things a little bit different for you for sure.
Yeah. So let's talk about your journey specifically. Let's go back to when you maybe first started noticing symptoms. What were they? What prompted you to get diagnosis? Tell me about the beginning of this journey.
Yeah. So when I was a teenager, I was diagnosed with depression and anxiety, which we now understand were symptoms of my bipolar disorder. But at that point, we didn't really understand. Looking back, I can see where I had manic episodes as a teenager. But at that point, we just thought I was a really passionate student. I was volunteering. I was working in a church. I was doing a co-op placement. I was doing huge fundraisers. I was in school, all these different things. And everybody was just like, wow, what a go-getter. I won awards for that. And looking back, it's like, oh, wow, that was super unhealthy. That was definitely a manic episode. I wasn't sleeping. I was running myself way too thin. I remember I had at one point I got in sick and I kept pushing through. And I got so sick, I ended up passing out and they had to like force me not to go I was supposed to volunteer that night and I was devastated and stuff like that, where that was just what I thought was my normal. And then it wasn't until 2013, I grew up in a really conservative Christian household. And I just packed up my whole life and moved to the other side of province with a guy, which was not what my family was really expecting, or anybody rather. I was on track to be a pastor. And it wasn't me at all. So I ended up moving away. Didn't really give anybody any notice, tore down a lot of relationships on the way and burnt a lot of bridges and made some really awful decisions while I was gone. So I was gone for about a year. And eventually what goes up must come down. And so I hit a point where I was like, okay, you know what, something's wrong. Like I am getting depressed. And so I was like, you know, I'm going to get some help. So I went to the hospital and asked for help. They had me talk to a crisis worker and they sent me home, and I must've went probably a solid 10 times. And every time I went, it got progressively worse because I was asking for help and not getting any help. And I was going to clinics and asking for help there. And I went to a therapist at one point. And so each place that I went, they gave me some sort of medication. So I had an antidepressant. I had all sorts of different medications. I don't even know what all of them were. And then I started getting these weird migraines. So they put me on a migraine medication, and then half my face started to go numb and tingly. And we were like, what is happening? So they did a MRI, like maybe it's a tumor or something that's causing this. Turns out it was all the medications that they had put me on. They weren't communicating with each other, the different clinics. And so I was on way too many different medications that all counteract with each other, and they're causing seizures and the sort. I ended up getting to a point where I was like, you know, I can't keep doing this anymore. So I went to the hospital and I talked to a crisis worker and I said, listen, I need help. I can't do this anymore. This is my last stop. If I do not get help here, then I'm not coming back, and I'm going to make a decision that I don't really want to make, but I don't see any other option. And they didn't take me seriously, and they sent me home because I was a college student, and they just figured it was just stress. So I went home and I attempted to take my own life. So I ended up back at the hospital. They held me overnight for less than 12 hours. And then they released me and let me go home without any support or help or anything that way. So I attempted the second time the next night. And at that point, I had written all my goodbyes, and I sent a message to a family friend asking them to just let my parents know that I didn't blame them for anything. And so the lady I texted called my parents. My parents found out, and they're like, we're going to drive up there. We don't know what to expect or what we can do. Or what, like, even if they'll let us in, but we're going to go. So they drove, it was about a 9-hour drive in the middle of the night. And they showed up at the hospital, and a doctor met them just outside the waiting room and said, listen, she's in here. You can definitely go see her. I recommend you take her home, because she's not going to get the help that she needs here. My parents came in, they talked to me, they packed up my whole life, and brought me back home, and they brought me in to see a crisis worker here. And I remember just telling my story and everything that I had done in the last year. And I was just so embarrassed. I couldn't make eye contact with the psychiatrist at all. And we showed her all the different medications I was on and all the different things. And she got down in front of me and she made eye contact with me. And she's like, Nicole, this is not your fault. And so then she explained what bipolar disorder was, and she gave me the diagnosis. And it was like the puzzle piece that I was missing fitting into place to going, oh my gosh, like, this isn't me. This is, it's something I live with, but that was not my personality. That was not my decisions, in a sense. And although I have to own up for everything that I've done in my past or what I do in the future, when I'm in a manic episode, it's not necessarily me that's causing these things to happen. So it was a really eye-opening moment where I realized, like, this is not my fault. So, and then I started my recovery from there.
Wow. That's a long journey to be able to get there. Mm-hmm. So you finally, you have a bit of an answer. You have a path forward. What did recovery, or what were the first things that, you started on in trying to manage this?
Yeah, so I went to a wellness program where it was like 3 weeks long, I believe it was. They taught you all about self-care and different coping mechanisms and all the things that explain what the different mental illnesses are and what they look like. And I learned a lot about myself in those 3 weeks. They kept tabs on me. So I was able to go home at night, but they kept tabs on, like, how am I doing? And is the medication working? So I went through that program. They told me I would need to see a psychiatrist and that I would have to get on a waiting list. So I did my research and I found a psychiatrist who is a specialist in bipolar disorder. And I was like, you know, if I'm going to go see someone, I want to see someone that gets it. So I got on a waiting list for her and got in to see her after a few months. And we worked to get myself on the right medication. And during that process, I was like, okay, what am I going to do with my life? And I did all this research and I was in Facebook groups, people with bipolar disorder, and I kept reading all these people saying they couldn't work a 9-to-5, they couldn't do this, that, or the other thing because their bipolar disorder was controlling their life. And I was like, I don't want this. That is not how I pictured my life to be. I'm not ready to give up and be okay with that. And not that people that are struggling with bipolar disorder and they can't hold down a 9-to-5 or anything like that. It's not that they're giving up, and I get that's a reality. But I was like, you know, I want something different. So I decided, you know what, if I can't work a 9-to-5, because the majority of people were saying that's really difficult to do, especially when you're recovering, I decided I was going to find a job that I could do from home. So I had taken a social media marketing class in college when I had moved away, and I was like, you know what, I loved it. Let's see how it goes. So I put an ad out on Kijiji, which is the American or the Canadian version of Craigslist. And not how I recommend you get a client, but that's what I did. And I landed my first client. I learned a ton working with them. I went to school for marketing. It started in January. And then by the time I graduated, I had enough clients that it didn't make sense to shut it all down and get a job at an agency somewhere working a 9-to-5. So I just kind of made a go of it working from home. And it's been honestly the best thing I could have done for myself, because I'm able to manage my mental health and take days for me. And I manage my whole business with the mindset that I'm going to have good days and bad days. And I want to make sure that when I come out of a bad day, that everything's still waiting for me here.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. So tell me a little bit more about the day-to-day struggles of this. What does make this, what makes this difficult for a lot of people to have a 9-to-5? What in a day might make it difficult for you to do something that you've committed to with this?
Yeah, so for me, working a 9-to-5 at the time, honestly, I could probably do it now if I really wanted to. I don't, but there are days where I'm like, you know what, I need to go back to bed. I can't manage. My anxiety is too high, or I'm having a really bad day with my depression. And so I can take those days and hide from the world in a sense and do it in a healthy way and take time for me and self-care and everything like that. But I can prioritize that. Whereas if I was working a 9-to-5, a lot of places don't, unfortunately, they don't accept, hey, I need a mental health day. There are some places and we're making leaps and bounds towards that, which is really great. But a lot of places you have to show up for work when you're scheduled. So that's a really hard struggle for people with any mental illness, but bipolar disorder can send us off for weeks or months at a time. And so knowing that a lot of times people who aren't stable find it really hard to hold down a job because they can't manage holding down the job and their mental health at the same time. So I've been lucky in the sense that I, since 2014, I've had one minor blip with a manic episode, but the rest of them were all depression episodes. And so I was able to push through a little bit. It did affect my business for sure. And it affected what I was doing, but for the most part, it didn't completely devastate me or my business. And so I was able to get the help that I need. But it gives me kind of that ability to be able to work around my mental health in a sense. And just make things a little bit more doable.
Yeah. I'm curious, when you were first diagnosed, how much did you know about bipolar disorder going into it? Did you have like a conception of it in your head that was not accurate? Did you have, was there an emotional response to getting that diagnosis that there wasn't for just kind of a generalized depression diagnosis? What was your thought process from what you knew about it?
So the only really experience I had with bipolar disorder was that I have a family member with bipolar disorder, and they are unmedicated. So watching that and seeing who they were as a person, it was a little bit scary because I was like, oh my gosh, I don't want this to be me. But we also had the conversation very quickly, my parents and I, about how, you know, they are unmedicated and that is why their life looks the way that they do. They're not taking any precautions or doing any therapy or anything to kind of help manage it. So that was a realization for me that I was like, you know, this is going to be a big priority for me. I am going to take my medication. I am going to do therapy. I'm going to do all the things that I can do to make sure that I stay stable and manage my mental health. So that way my life doesn't look like that. So it was the only other experiences I had with bipolar disorder was seeing stuff in the media. And even to this day, if I watch a video or a movie about bipolar disorder, a lot of times I'm like, that's nothing like what I experience. And so there is a few that are well done, and there's movies where they have somebody with bipolar disorder and I can relate to a specific scene or something from it. But the biggest thing is that a lot of it is just a big stigma. And I didn't realize how much stigma I had even about bipolar disorder after years of being diagnosed with it. I was hospitalized last August. So in 2019. And I was hospitalized for depression, and there was a few other people that I was hospitalized with bipolar disorder. And I was terrified. And I was like, had this moment of realization where I'm like, why am I so scared of these people? I have bipolar disorder. And I didn't realize how much of stigma that I held on to, because we see in the media people with bipolar disorder, they're very aggressive, they're angry, they're dangerous in a sense. And that's not at all my experience. And everybody that I met in there definitely none of those stereotypical things were real. And so I didn't realize how much stigma I was holding on to until that point, but it's interesting to see and try to figure out where all that stigma comes from.
Yeah, for sure. So this is managed with a combination of medication and therapy. What kinds of things have you found to be really helpful in your therapy? What does therapy for bipolar disorder look like?
So there's been many different courses and things that I've sat through, different programs where I've learned more about bipolar disorder. I just finished one a few months ago, and it was just really interesting. The more you learn about something, the less scary it gets, the more ways that you can learn how to manage it. I've taken ones on like DBT and CBT and learning how your brain works, and how to manage your emotions or your moods through your thought processes, and kind of exploring that in the sense. So in terms of therapy, like before COVID was a thing, I was seeing a therapist regularly and just kind of talking about everything I was going through. Sometimes just having somebody to be able to talk to about what's going on in your life can be really helpful for anybody, not just somebody with bipolar disorder. But for me, I found that was a really great way of keeping me stable. And then doing things like there's studies where you can do, like getting regular massages or seeing a chiropractor or watching what you're eating, or there's all sorts of different things you can find on the internet. And so I'm not going to say one thing works and one thing doesn't, for sure, because I mean, a lot of it is just basic taking care of yourself, but I know what works for me. And so I've been doing that. I'm really careful about the types of foods that I eat, just as to keep me healthy, but makes me feel my best self. And doing things like drinking enough water, going for walks regularly, and then the basic medication. I work with my psychiatrist. If I don't like the medication I'm on, I let her know, and then we work to find something else that works, that doesn't have the side effects that are bothering me. So it's been it's been a long journey and a process to kind of determine exactly what works for me and what doesn't. But so far, so good.
Yeah. I just lost where I was going to go. Oh, there we go. So I think there are, I think a lot of people now have a better understanding of what depression looks like than they maybe have in years past. But I think a lot of folks, including myself, still don't have a really strong understanding of what the manic side of this looks like for bipolar disorder. So can you talk to us a little bit more about that? Like, how frequently does that happen for you? What does, what is it like being in the middle of it? What can you do to kind of to readjust? What is, just explain a little bit more about that.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So for me, and everybody's experience is completely different, like you kind of said at the beginning of this podcast. Absolutely. But, for me, a manic episode, I'm lucky in the sense that I've only had a few of them. And since being on medication, I really haven't had any issues except for when we changed my medications at one point. So I'm lucky in the sense that I am stable for the most part. Some people aren't as lucky and they experience it more often. So manic episodes for me, it's a lot of uncharacteristic behaviors. So I never drank before my manic episode. And then I was drinking all the time, which in the grand scheme of things, a lot of people are like, yeah, okay, whatever. But for me, that was a really big thing. It was something that I was like, yeah, I'm never going to do. And then I started doing it. And there's other stuff that I don't really need to share. But making decisions that I normally wouldn't have made, spending a ton of money. I still to this day have no idea how I made ends meet with the amount of stuff I collected and the money I was spending. But like blowing through a lot of money is another thing. It's very common for people with manic episodes. And just doing things that are unhealthy or unsafe. So you'll see people like, they get this new type of confidence. So if you're terrified of heights and then you have a manic episode, maybe you decide that you're going to jump out of a plane. That would not be something that you would normally want to do or even think to do. But in a manic episode, it's not scary. Let's go do it. Let's have fun. And so it's a lot of behaviors like that where it's just like, oh, you know what? This is not the same characteristics. You're less afraid of, or have less fear about stuff that you normally would. And you act more, some people say it's like having like a God complex. You're untouchable. You are above everybody else. And so you go through that with that mindset. So everybody experiences differently, but that's kind of the majority of what that would look like.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm curious as well, we talk about these as in terms of episodes, how long for you do these typically last?
Yeah, so a few months, the longest one was about a year. A manic episode, I believe it's 7 days straight until you are officially in a manic episode. I think the shortest one I ever had was like about a week or two, and it wasn't even a full blown. I realized something was wrong and I went to the doctor and was like, okay, I think it's the medication that I was on. And sure enough, it was. We had to try a different medication. But we caught it really quickly because I'm aware of how I feel. And I was like, you know what? I feel like bolting. That's my thing. When I'm manic, I bolt. I decide everybody's out to get me and I run away. And it's not a good thing, obviously. So I remember feeling, I'm like, you know, I think I'm manic. And so I got my car keys and I handed them to my dad. And I was like, I need you to take these and don't give them back to me until we figure out this medication thing, because I think I'm manic. And sure enough, like a day or two later, I was like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to go. And I didn't have my keys. So it was kind of a saving grace that I had that moment of clear thinking at the beginning. But yeah, so it can be anywhere from a couple weeks to years.
Okay. So comparing where you are now that you've kind of as you're managing this and recovering from dealing with this, how would you compare what it's like now versus when you were first diagnosed? What has changed for you?
Oh my gosh, everything. Before I was diagnosed, I wasn't doing anything to kind of protect my mental health. It wasn't even until like maybe 2 or 3 years ago that when somebody would be like, you need to take time for self-care, I wouldn't roll my eyes and be like, oh my gosh, I don't want to take a bubble bath. Because that's what everybody assumes self-care looks like. My life looks drastically different because I take care of myself now. I watch what I eat. I'm taking time for myself and starting my day off right. I have tons of boundaries set now to make sure that I'm not wearing myself too thin or extending myself too far. And before my diagnosis, there was no reason for me to think to need to do that. So I was wearing myself too thin. I wasn't sleeping properly. I wasn't doing anything to kind of take care of myself. And I kind of embraced this whole, I can do everything, attitude, where I was overworking myself and then moving into a manic episode because I wasn't sleeping or I wasn't taking care of myself. So, the diagnosis really changed. It changed everything for me. It changed how I look at life and how I manage it now.
Mm. Tell me, you talked about finding other folks with bipolar disorder on Facebook. Tell me a little bit about, any communities or resources or connections with other people that you made to kind of help you navigate this.
Yeah, so I mean, there's lots of different groups out there. I'm really cautious when I join groups. I want to make sure that it's not triggering in a way. So a lot of groups that I've joined, I feel like they pull me down into this like despair mode where I'm the victim of my mental health. So I'm really cautious about that. So what I've done for me, I have a mental health blog that I write my experiences and I have a team of people that write their mental health experiences. And so we produce blogs throughout the month for that. I created call it the 1 in 5 social managers club. As for social media managers and virtual assistants, that's what I do for a living. And I wanted to make sure that people like me had a place where we could be like, hey, I'm struggling, I am not okay, but in a place where our clients weren't going to see it. So we could be honest about like, this is where I'm at. And this is what I need to support. And you have people in there who are all going through the same thing and we can all support each other. So find Facebook groups that make the most sense for you and what fits for you. I know that there's Facebook groups out there for moms with bipolar, or I know my mom's even parts of ones where it's for parents of people with bipolar disorder, and so she can hear other people's experiences from there and help support me in any way that she can. So there's tons of different resources and stuff like that out there. I'm a huge fan of The Mighty. They talk about mental illness and chronic illnesses. And so I'm a writer for them, but they have a ton of resources for people with bipolar disorder or learning how or what that looks like for other people.
How open are you about this in your everyday life? Is this something you tell people or is it something that is kind of a little bit more private for you?
Oh, I'm super open about it. I do a lot of podcasts about it. I have that mental health blog like I talked about. I tend to share it probably more than the average person. I write about it on social media a lot. And because I'm a social media manager, that's like my main platform. But I'm really open about it. And every time I'm open about it, I find that it helps me in some way. I've literally landed clients because they're like, hey, I saw that you have bipolar disorder. So do I. I would really love to like work with you. I saw that you were talking about bipolar disorder and so-and-so is related to me and they have bipolar disorder. And so I'm really open about it because it works for me and not everybody is, and that's totally okay. But I found for me, like I'm very open with all of my friends about it. We've had conversations about what my life would look like if I'm having a manic episode. like my best friend has kids, and I'm very cautious about, like, if I'm in a manic episode, I'm not going to come around your kids for a little bit, because I want to protect them from that version of myself. And so having those conversations are a really big thing for me too. I'm not shy about it, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
What's been the misconception that you've had to kind of correct for people the most?
I find that a lot of people use bipolar as a swear word, in a sense. And so they're like, oh, you know, I was really moody today. And they use, like, that's what they assume bipolar is, when you're being irrationally unmoody, or irrationally moody. And that's not at all what that looks like. I had one doctor one time, I was having an allergic reaction to something, and because of my bipolar disorder, I can't take certain medications because they cause manic episodes. And so he prescribed me a medication, and I said, I can't actually take that. It causes a manic episode. And he looked at me and he said, oh, this won't make you hyper. And I was like, no, I'm sure it won't, but that's not what manic is. And I was a little bit dumbfounded, because, I mean, he's the doctor, just an older generation, and clearly didn't have that training. And so I had to go to a different doctor to get help that I needed, because I was like, I cannot take this medication. It'll actually make me sicker. There's a lot of misconceptions on it, but just because you are hyper or you're moody does not mean that you are bipolar. And so it's really easy for people to say that. I had an experience, I was in a Facebook group, and I was talking, it was for social media managers, and I was trying to figure something out with a client, and somebody commented on my post and said, oh, they sound bipolar, I would run away. And I was like, oh, so you don't know who I am. Because I am bipolar, so not cool. And so I kind of just, I walked away from the computer for a few minutes, because I was not the happiest person in the world. But then I was like, I think you're looking for a different word. I don't think that bipolar is the word that you're looking for. So I try to come through with the education piece whenever somebody says something that isn't correct, but people do this all the time with all sorts of mental illness statements as well.
Yeah. Okay, so as this podcast goes out, it's most likely going out to one of three different groups of people. You'll have some who are in very much the same place you are, where they've been diagnosed and they've been in treatment, and they've kind of and they're managing it. But on the other side, we have some people who maybe are just starting this out. Maybe they just got a diagnosis, or they listen to this and they think, maybe I need to go to a doctor. They're recognizing some of these symptoms. And then you'll have people who have no connection with this at all, who will never be close to anyone with bipolar, will never have it themselves. And I'd love for you to speak to each of those last two, one who maybe is at the beginning of this journey and maybe needs some advice or some encouragement. And this might be just a reiteration of some of the resources you mentioned earlier. And then on the flip side, somebody who will never have personal connection with this, but something that you would want them to walk away from this podcast with.
Sure. Yeah. So if you're just being diagnosed, it's going to be scary. It's going to seem really scary. It doesn't have to be, though. The biggest thing that I would say is make sure that you're fighting for yourself. Make sure you're getting to see the right kind of doctors. Make sure that you are using all of the resources that are offered to you. When I first got diagnosed, I passed on a lot of things, and I was like, oh, you know what, I'm good. And I wish I hadn't, because 7 years later, now I'm taking some of these courses that they offered me originally. And I'm learning so much about myself. So take all of the resources that you can, and really focus on getting to know yourself, getting to know your disorder and what your life can look like from that. And make sure that you don't fall into this pit of despair where your world is ending because you have this diagnosis. That's not the reality for most people with mental illness. Even if you're having a lot of trouble struggling with your mental illness, you can still find the good in it. If you are somebody who has no personal relation to it. I'm going to say this. So there is 1 in 5 people or 1 in 4 people, depending on where you live, have a mental illness. So even though you might not have bipolar disorder or know anybody that has bipolar disorder, there is a chance that you will come at one point or another in contact with somebody, whether you know it or not, who has a mental illness. And so just educate yourself, be aware of it, watch how you're speaking about people with mental illness, and just, yeah, educate yourself. That's the biggest thing that I think you would say. And then that way you're treating everybody the way that you would want to be treated.
Yeah. Okay. So as we kind of close things out, is there anything about this experience that you wanted to make sure that you shared that we haven't gotten a chance to talk about yet?
I don't think so. I think we covered it all.
Nice. Okay. Awesome. Then first of all, I want to say thank you so, so much for being willing to come on and share your experiences with me. And I want to make sure and give you a second to plug anything of your own that you want to share. So anything that if listeners want to read about your mental health journey or connect with you in any way, where's the best place for them to find you?
Yeah, so being a social media manager, I am everywhere on social media. So if you just search for my name, so it's Nicole Housen. I have an H in the middle of my first name. My parents wanted to see if they could get my diploma spelled wrong, or at least that's what I tell myself. It's N-I-C-H-O-L-E, but you can find me anywhere on social media. You can check me out there and learn more about what I do or my mental health story.
Awesome. Well, once again, thank you so much for joining us, Nicole. It's been really a pleasure to talk with you about this.
No problem. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. All right, folks, that is the podcast. I'll be back next week interviewing somebody else about something else completely different. As always, if you want to be a guest on a future podcast, I'd love to have you. You can send me an email at whatsitlikethepodcast@gmail.com, or you can follow me on Twitter at @podwhatsitlike, and you can fill out a little form, tell me what you'd be interested in talking about, because everybody's got a story, and I would love to hear yours. Either way, tune in next week for somebody else's story. We'll see you then.